Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Power episode of the Power Cosmic. I'm your host with the most, Mitchell A.S. Halleck. Joining me every week when he's not relieving his bladder is Mr. John Cimino. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Mitchie.
John, we've got to start this week off with the thing that's on everyone's mind. Everyone's talking about it. You know it. You've heard about it. You've even sold some of it. I'm talking about Batawang. Batawang is the term that Scott Martin came up with to refer to the latest issue of the brand new series Batman Damned, Book 1, from DC's new Black Label, which is intended for mature audiences. And in that book, we see the Dark Knight remove his costume and walk around Wayne Manor in the nude, showing off his, you know.
I'm wondering if they used Matches Malone as a model for that. I don't know.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that at all. Well, that's a shocker right there. Yes, I read the story. It's by Brian Azzarello. Artwork by, what is his first name? It's Bermejo. Lee Bermejo, who's actually a brilliant artist. He did a book called The Joker years ago, graphic novel. I always remember it. Very gorgeous art. Looks painted and such. But it's a really good story. I mean, aside from the nudity, it's a story about the Joker's dead. It's obviously one of those Elseworlds, we used to call them, like a fantasy story. And Batman's trying to figure out what happened. Yeah.
It's an Elseworlds tale, so it isn't really even the real Batman's
peepee? Well, obviously, the Joker's not dead, but for the sake of story, in this particular instance, he's dead, and then Batman has to go talk to John Constantine. He has to go talk to the dead man is in this story as well. So there's a lot of mystical, magical elements to it. So I'm not putting it with normal continuity.
So, I mean, I didn't read the issue. I don't really care to. But, like, so it's, all right, so it's, is it like a different dimension or it's
well, they
just,
don't specific, it's just a story about the Batman. That's about, so, we'll just put that.
But everything is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. Commissioner Gordon's in there. The whole, you know, the typical Batman tropes are in there, yeah.
Oh, okay, because I don't know if it's like an alternate timeline.
No. Well, yeah, no. Well, obviously, they've never killed the Joker, except if the Killing Joke, if you want to get into that, but that's another thing. So anyway, the book itself, I quietly came out last Wednesday. I walked into the comic book store about 12, an hour after they opened, and there was a bunch of them on the shelves, and I picked it up. First off, it's a magazine size format. It's not your typical comic book size. So already I was like, oh, geez, that's not going
to
fit.
Yeah, it was hell to put in a
yes.
bag.
Yes. I said, that's not going to fit in the long box when this is all said and done because it's magazine shaped. And then I said, okay, so I bought one and I flipped through to see if there was a variant cover, which you tell me there was and I've seen subsequently. I wish I could look more. I would have grabbed that one because I like getting the variant covers. But I just picked one copy up and walked out of the store. And then about an hour or two later, I see Paul Kupperberg retweeting an article saying that Batman exposed himself in this issue. And then I called.
Oh, so you bought it without even knowing?
Yeah, no, I had no idea. I was just getting a new book. It said, you know, for mature audiences, a new series, Batman Dark. I'm like, yeah, what the hell? Issue one. It's not much money. It's only $6.99, which nowadays is a bargain for comics. And like I said, the artwork was very nice. And it's longer than your typical comic. So I said, sure, $6-$7, what the hell? And then I talked to you, and then next thing you know, the world goes crazy. Once word got out that the Batawang was out, and he was flat. And it's not just one panel where you see the Batman's junk. It's several panels as he's walking through the Batcave. If you look good, you can see it.
Almost in a silhouette, though.
Yes,
silhouette.
Yeah. It's never gratuitous.
You get the top ridge, though. You get the top of the shaft, like the little ridge in there. So
He is circumcised. We know that now from Batman.
Yeah, I know. It's true.
It's true. But bat circumcision. But it comes down to this. I'll say my bit, and I know where you're going to go for it, too. It was issue one of a $7 book. It's the Batman. They know that sells. And DC's doing pretty good sales-wise for comics. And they want to get on, you know, they want to get on the radar. They want people to talk about it. They want to sell books. At the end of the day, this is about selling merchandise. And if you could show Batman's penis, even though it really doesn't affect the storyline at all, at not 1% of the story is affected by the fact that he's naked, but you could sell more books, you're going to do what you got to do. So that's it. It was just, to me, it was just a sales ploy. That's all I think it was. Yeah, what do you think, Johnny?
I think the backlash for it was like, you know, Batman, Superman, those are kind of like, you know, they're such iconic characters, almost like national treasures. They're Americana, I must say, because, you know, born and bred in America, they're just, it's like, seriously, Mickey Mouse walking, it's like, you know, that the big statue when you go to Disneyland, he's got a little, Mickey's got a big dick or something. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's almost like blasphemy. Now, do I care? No. But I mean, like, I don't like when my superheroes are trashed. Like, I'm such a purist. When they do memes or something and it's supposed to be sexual in nature. I'm not into that. I look at it with kid eyes, and it was an innocent time in my life, and they inspired me. So when they have to like dumb them down or get them all gritty and all that, I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan. Well, I know why they did it, but I will tell you this about the market. In all my years of being a dealer and knowing the market, nothing has shot up literally within days, like in much in value as that comic.
Well, even more so now, because now they've announced that future printings or reprintings of this book and the digital version will have the Batwang taken out of the story. It's not going to be there. You're not going to see it anymore.
So now what this did was it stimulated the market so much. You had all the normal people going for it, and that's it. But, you know, a bunch of comic stores took it and put it underneath the counter and waited
Which any enterprising business person would do. I got to give credit to Cave Comics. They didn't do that. They didn't take them off the shelf. They just left them out there. You want it? You want it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, Cave Comics seems to be making a lot of mistakes.
Stop it. But what would you have done? You would have taken it off the shelf and repriced it?
No, I'll tell you. Literally, I had a couple. I know I asked you to get me two, and you said it was sold out.
They were gone,
I had other connections. So I got three of the regular cover and then one Jim Lee. And I just said, I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to put them for 100 each. Because right now, you're going to get the people that never collect comics or know Batman, and now they're coming into the stores looking for that issue. So, I mean, I know probably about 1 million copies are out there, but there's probably 2 million, 3 million people now that want that. So why? What happens? It shoots up in value. You can go to eBay and you can see. I said $100, and I sold two of them for $100. The Jim Lee one I put for $150. Why? It's Jim Lee. See what we're gonna do, and you go online. They're selling 60 to
between. Yeah, on average, it's about 65 to 100 on eBay.
Right. Now, as more word comes out, you're going to have literally people like, oh, my God, I want to see Batman's. I can't believe they did that. So more people are going to come in. More people are going to look for it. Supply and demand. And so with that going on, literally within days, I mean, it came out on Wednesday, and I sold two of them this Sunday, literally 4 days later. For what's that? How much? What's that? 1,000% profit?
Well, almost $7. If it was 70, yeah.
I mean, the profit. I mean, it was crazy. So there was $14 that I sold for $200. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like, that's crazy. So will this last? I don't think so. I mean, I think eventually, but I think it's going to stay about a $30 book, which is insane. I mean, there's going to be some stores out there that don't have a clue about nothing, and, you know, it's on the rack, and they didn't know. But, you know, a lot of comic stores that took that, and they bumped up that price.
Well, there you go. Well, there you go. The supply and demand. You hit the nail on the head, and that's what a lot of
it's
these
like
people
the
are.
Big. It's not like there's been mistakes before. Remember the kike when
I remember that one on Wolverine.
Okay, like one of those things. You know, sometimes there's a mistake. Sometimes there's a swear. Remember that.
Fruit Loops is. Well, I was going to say Fruit Loops is fruit shit or something in one of the 80s books.
But do you remember Al Milgrom put in a shade for Bob Harris? He was the editor-in-chief, and he said, well, he's an asshole or something.
Yeah, and it got printed.
Yeah, and it got printed. And
Al lost his job after that, right?
I would think so, yeah. And then Bob Harris, I think, eventually got fired himself.
No, I think he's at DC now.
He's at DC. No, right. But at that time,
he was at Marvel, yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, but this is a little bit different because, you know, this wasn't, like, something that, you know, it was intentional, but, you know, it's a lot more.
No, this wasn't just by accident. The man drew it, they inked it, they colored
it,
they printed it, yeah.
No, it was an adult thing. I think, you know what I think? I mean, these people are marketing geniuses. They, you know, the people that work for DC, and, you know, I mean, there's a lot more to it than just, I think that, you know, they wanted to cause a stir. You know, I think they, you know, they, all the editors and all the, you know, the boss, that's not going to go through.
I'm amazed it didn't get out before the book came out, because I knew this book was coming out that day, but I had no idea.
Yeah, that's interesting too. Maybe that was all concocted. I don't know.
Yeah, because I didn't know anything about the Batawang, trademark Scott Martin, 2018. But I had no idea. And you know, now I'm going to throw this out there to you, and you tell me if it's hypocrisy. The character of Harley Quinn appeared topless for several panels and had sex with the Joker in a book called Batman White Knights by Sean Murphy that came out earlier this year, issue 3, and you don't even hear boo about it, and I don't even know if the sales have increased about that, but topless.
Yeah, but let me ask you, I didn't see that issue, but is it like fully, you see full nipples, or just a hint of nipple?
Excuse me, yes, absolutely, full, yes, the whole breasts are out, both of them.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but you remember the She-Hulk graphic novel that John Byrne did back in the 80s?
Yes, I do, yes.
Yeah, you can see hints of her nipples in there, too.
Oh, these aren't hints. This is full-on. But I'm saying, is it just the double...
Okay, well, that's what I'm asking. It was legit full-on.
Yes, yes. You can go online later. Just Google it. But I'm... Okay. What is... I'm going to sneeze. Excuse me. What is the... What is the hypocrisy? I don't have my mute button to my sneeze button, but what is the hypocrisy of this country that the male anatomy sells a book at $100 and yet the female stuff we don't even get into?
Well, number one, I'm going to say, Harley Quinn is big today. Like that's, you know, I mean, she's just been big in the last, you know, 20 years. Batman's been around for a million years. So, I'm just saying, Batman is such a bigger. It's such a bigger.
It's more iconic. I mean, it's we've said it before.
It's a big deal. He's more of a bigger deal.
He's the number one or two or three of the top superheroes ever.
I would say number one, if you ask me. I would say most popular in the world. Yeah,
Batman is one, and then it's probably Spider-Man.
Yeah, and then you, I would have to throw, I mean, then you would have, Superman is so out that, you know, yeah, the kids today, I mean, I think just contemporary kids today just, you know, they don't know him and they don't care, so that hurts them.
Superman has become like Babe Ruth. Like, when you're a kid, no matter what team you follow, but everybody knows the legend of Babe Ruth. It's like, oh, right, Babe Ruth, the biggest thing. But then you go looking at, his home run record was broken years ago. He wasn't the greatest athlete in the world when it comes to running bases, obviously. Hot dog eating, yeah. But it's just iconic. You go, oh, Babe Ruth. That's baseball.
Right. And the funny thing is you look at Superman, yeah, and he looked so, you know, he looks like that almost that type of costume and stuff just doesn't work. You know, I know eventually he'll come back. It was like, hey, if you people don't remember this, but in the 90s, the late 90s, when X-Men was so big, Spider-Man was out. Spider-Man dropped in the rank.
Yeah.
Remember how bad he was doing?
Yeah.
Howard Mackey was writing him for years. But I mean, Spider-Man, I even remember talking, I was working in a comic book store, and I remember talking to the kid I was working with, and I go, can you believe Spider-Man is, like, not hip? It was all X-Men and all that stuff. Spider-Man was down in the dump. So they can come back. And right now, Spider-Man may be behind Super Batman. But, I mean, so these characters, you know, there's an elasticity to them. They can bounce back. But right now, Superman is out.
And
But I think because you did that to Batman, I think that it's a bigger deal. Now we got to throw this out there. You know, I still think, though we like to have, you know, a lot of girls and guys are in the medium, it's still more of a male-dominated medium. So getting a couple of tits.
Easy with the language now.
And doing tricks for tits, whatever. I mean, like, I think that, you know, guys just kind of let that slide. But I think, you know, I think...
Easy. You know, all right. Well, this is a...
I got pissed about Batman's bat pole.
Is bat pole, batawang, bat dick. It's been all over the news.
Yeah.
Well, it's...
Just let me ask you this, Mitch.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't... I kind of... I'm not really into the... You know, like, into the media stuff. I hear stuff through you, Kupperberg. You know, when you get
online.
Yeah.
We're your source to the outside world.
Yeah, the sources I always miss. But let me ask you this. Is it out there now? Like, did it make in the news? Did it get into, like, the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people were talking about it on the evening news.
But was it on TV and on the, like...
Yes. Yes.
Wow, it was. Wow, okay.
I saw it. It was there. Anyway, so that's the story. Issue 2 is probably getting advanced sales now. People want to read it, you know, to see what else you see, literally. But that's what it is with the old Batman book. Again, when you're making books aimed at adult audiences, you know, I guess adult means you walk around with no pants on. We should do a Power Cosmic episode where it's adult, or this one's probably the most adult-oriented one we are with the language you've been using, potty mouth. But
what about
we'll sit around naked. What?
Yeah, but people tend to forget the Max line that you know, remember Jamal?
Oh, yeah. That was Marvel. Now, they did one, yeah.
Now, people didn't care about when Nick Fury was banging a couple of Asian hookers, and there was, like, anal beads and stuff.
Whoa, there was?
Yeah. I mean, nobody cared about that because I guess
Nick Fury's not iconic.
Right. So, I mean, like, so you see him, like... That's all. I see. Everything is very situational. You know, some people are outraged because of this. Some people are outraged of this. But more people are outraged because this. Because this guy said it. So Batman is.
You, like, don't touch Batman.
Yeah, you don't touch. You don't touch. You only let Selina go.
You don't pull on Superman's cape. You don't mess around with, you know.
You know the song.
Anyway. Anyway, so that was the big news of the week, the big Batman news. There was other news there. Henry Cavill, I think we mentioned last week, out as Superman. Ben Affleck, out as Batman. We don't know what's going on.
Straight to rehab. Even the back seat of the car.
He's got some problems.
They stopped at that Jack in the Box, too.
I got to get to a rehab. Hey, let's get a burger. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, and his wife there, she's coincidentally had a big movie coming out. That kind of went nowhere.
No, ex-wife.
Ex-wife, though. I'm sorry, Peppermint. Or a.k.a. Elektra, for fans of the Daredevil movie. She was in that. Awful. The Elektra. You ever see that Elektra movie?
Yeah, it's 2 minutes.
Oh, my God. With the guy with the tattoos.
I was sleeping.
Anyway, Speaking of comics, last week we were going to go on to the monster books. Last Friday, as I was on my way to Maryland, I texted you, my Cave Comics did something terrible. They put up a comic I was looking for and I couldn't get to it in time, and I went there and not only was the Batman book gone, but a price on a book that I wanted so badly, and I was calling you and we couldn't believe it. Spider-Man issue 101, first appearance of Morbius, the living vampire, created by Mr. Roy Thomas, $50. And I called you and you were like, unbelievable. Because how much would Johnny sell that book for?
No, depending on condition, I mean, if he put it on, you still, that's no less than $100, even in bad shape. I mean, like, no less than 100. That thing can go, I mean, it's just stupid. And the reason why I know trends and what's hot and not, is like usually when me and Roy are at shows and then you just see what the influx of stuff that's coming through. And I'll tell you, these last two shows from Terrific Gan to Knoxville, Tennessee, and everywhere in between, the big two books was obviously Marvel Superheroes number 13, Carol Danvers, and first appearance of Carol Danvers, and that 101. It's just, and Roy likes signing the 101 because it's that big white punch that, you know, like the explosion. He likes to sign right there, right?
That's the Gil Kane cover, correct?
Yeah, it's the Gil Kane, and you know how he's hitting Spider-Man in the punch.
Now that's becoming big news because that's soon to be a movie with
Jared Leto,
I don't know how to say it, but he's going to be the living vampire, because there's a new Joker movie, which has also been making the rounds on the internet, that has Joaquin
Joker
Phoenix.
In Suicide Squad.
Yeah, he was the Joker in the Suicide Squad, but now we have a new movie, which is out of context with those other DC movies. I've heard hint that it might be a prequel to the Dark Knight movie, being the Heath Ledger Joker, but it has Joaquin Phoenix donning the white face of the Joker. He's even got the outfit. He had the purple jacket and the yellow vest and all that. So we'll see.
All right, wait. Can I tell you my problem with that, Mitch?
What?
I think it looks horrible. And I think,
really?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Now, when you look at it the way I look at it, you might agree with me. I'm not saying Joaquin is not a great actor, and he might do a great job as a movie, but the look, because that's an early version of the Joker, so I'll give it that. You know, I'm not a big Joker fan. You know, I'm not great. I like him, but whatever. But my problem is, the clown makeup?
Yeah.
You know how one side of the blue is like there and the other one is long?
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
It looks so pretentious. Like, he went out and he's like, I'm going to be crazy. I'm going to make this eye more wacko.
Yeah, and it bothered me every time I see it. I'm like, fix that.
Right, and they look like he's just doing it to be crazy. And that's when I saw that. I was like, ugh. It looks so stupid. But, you know, I know he's a good actor, and I don't want to throw it in
the
trash.
Well, it's got a huge cast list. It's got Robert De Niro and what?
Oh, really?
I believe this is the one. Is this the one they were talking about that had Robert De Niro in it? And Alec Baldwin was going to be Thomas Wayne, which I was like, wait, if he's Thomas Wayne, that means Bruce Wayne's not Batman yet. And who knows? But Alec Baldwin's out. He dropped out of the movie.
I remember hearing that. But I didn't know De Niro was going to be. This is how desperate WB is. It's like, we can't do this right. So we're going to, like, throw some big-name actors. As we know today, even big-name actors cannot sustain a movie. It's got to have content. It's got to be a good story. So I do think Joaquin is a good choice for the Joker because he is a good actor. But how is it going to look?
I don't know. We'll have to find out when we buy our tickets next year. And the other thing to talk about...
Well, I like the bootleg first. That's a bootleg.
Yeah. And then we've got an Aquaman movie coming out at Christmas time from DC. And we have...
Okay. Starring Lewis Perry.
And then we have the... what the hell? There's another... Oh, Shazam comes out next April. I'm going to be seeing Shazam this weekend as I travel back to Maryland for Baltimore Comic Con. He's going to be one of the main guests there.
Okay.
Zachary Levi, and I told Ordway to make a print.
Well, you know, Well, I'll tell you, Zachary's smart. Let's get the ball rolling now so they don't hate me in March. And they don't
I did think it was odd that he was already out, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's not – you tell me that's not – that's intentional because they don't know how that's really going to do. So he's like – he's smart, you know, probably getting a few offers, and he's probably saying, you know what? I'm going to do that now because, like I said, after March, it's going to be like maybe no one's.
Well, you know what's weird? Because the reputation, Baltimore Comic Con is much like Terrific Con. In fact, that's the model I follow. That's a comic fan show. That's why I'm going. Yeah. It's all comic books, mostly comic creators. Very few actors. They get maybe about a half dozen. New York Comic Con is the following week, which is, of course, the big 100 and 200,000 attendees. One would think he would go there because that's the bigger media show. That's the bigger impact. That's 200,000 fans as opposed to Baltimore, which is about 30. But you're right. He's probably like, let me appeal to the pure comic book fans and hopefully they'll rally behind me and, you know, be fans of the movie.
Because let's be honest. It's anticipation that drives the crowd before they see it because it captures the imagination. If that movie bombs, it's over. Like, I mean, like, I'm not.
Well, no, they got Wonder Woman too. They still have Wonder Woman. That's their bona fide hit.
No. What I mean is, like, his price tag to be. It's over.
Yeah.
Like, because you still have to have substance in the movie. The anticipation always works because, like, right now everybody's looking for that that Shazam 29, the one, you know, with the the first Black Adam, you know, modern Black Adam. But if that movie comes out and then it bombs, then like the demand goes down, you know, it's just like, it's what happened with Fantastic Four. Those comics were selling great, you know, and back in the day, then all of a sudden it had
the movies came out and bombed and that's what affected it.
The movies. Yeah. Nobody wanted that stuff anymore. Yeah. Fantastic Four was in the hole.
Well, so, the funniest thing, when I was talking about that Spider-Man book, the guy at the shop told me that the prices on Spider-Man back issues over the last 5 years, he said, have been insane. Everything's like at least $50-$60 or not more. What was that, due to the movies? I mean, I can't understand.
Well, I'll tell you though, even when Spidey wasn't hip in the 90s and stuff, his back issues from 202 and back, all the way to Amazing Fantasy number 1 and all those annuals in between, those issues were always pretty consistent. Even when he wasn't hip. And I'll tell you, in all my years of doing this, nothing sells better than Spider-Man's. It's just something about those issues. Now, issues after 202, of course, still sell good, but nothing, nothing. What comes close to that, though, is the Batman stuff from the 70s. That is always that's always pretty consistent. Other than that, all the Marvel's doing well now, but Spider-Man has
If you were to go tomorrow, unlike me who just buys the books, doesn't even have any CGC or CBCS bound books or molded books, whatever you call it. But if you were going to get books, if you wanted to get something of value, I'm thinking, now just being a novice, most of the Marvel Bronze Age characters are just ripe for the picking because it seems to be they're mining those for TV and movie appearances.
I'm telling you that now, like the Roy Thomas tenure, like, you know, his editorial shit, all those heroes are all coming into prominence. And it's funny. It's just like the comic books, you know, like you have the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko stuff, you know, making the foundation. And then now these new guys start picking up the weight.
Right.
And then it's just like the comics back in the day. So now all those characters, but those 70s stuff are insane. Now let's we know what Hulk 181, the first Wolverine is.
What about Ghost Rider number 1? Let's get some movies. That's already been a movie twice already. What would you do?
Yeah, but those the prices are crazy.
Really? For Ghost Rider?
The first Ghost Riders, yes, that has a, no, but 181, the Star Wars is kind of, I mean, that will always
be. It goes up and down, Star Wars 1, I've seen it.
But the 35-cent one is the most valuable comic out of the Bronze Age, the 35-cent, like.
When they switch prices on it?
Yeah, and because there's only so many of those. That's the most expensive. Number 2 is Hulk 181. But the Spider-Man 129, the Spider-Man 121, the Death of Gwen Stacy, which I don't know why I passed on at a show the other day. I don't know why I passed it. But all those Spider-Mans, they're just I don't know, Mitch, but you told me the Avengers, all those Avengers from like the 70s, they're actually selling. Because the funny thing with the Avengers, people don't realize this when they're going to sell. I've bought in a lot of runs of Avengers, but nobody, the Avengers isn't that big. It wasn't that profitable because number one of Avengers is not a first appearance for anybody, if you think about that. Yeah. So everybody, but it's the first Avengers, so they want number one, they want. But number four, the modern Captain America. And then they jump all the way to the 57, the Vision one. All those comics, they're not really as, they were never really that popular. So if you have that run and you come to sell me that run, I'm not really going to give you as much as you think.
But when does it get crazy?
But now it has started because
Black Panther.
Yeah, you got the Black Panther, but the Kree Skrull War, like all those stories that are kind of now getting woven into the movies. Those are all Roy's Avengers stuff, like you know, it's all that middle stuff, and so now there's been like that has jumped. The first adamantium, obviously, the number 66, I think it is, which Roy
Ultron,
did.
Ultron,
but I'm just saying, like it's funny how those movies just dictate the market. But all the Marvels are hot because let's be honest now. Let's do the rumor of the Captain Marvel movie, which people assume that Jude Law is Marvel, but I'm hearing different now. Who is it, Mitch?
It's that one with a funky name, Ramu.
Yon Rong.
Yon Rom, who appeared in Captain Marvel issue 8?
No. His first appearance was actually, he was created by Stan Lee and Gene Colan. That was Marvel Superheroes number 12.
Ooh, so we'll have to start looking at the back bin issues for that quickly.
Yeah, so people are thinking that.
And
that's
he's a Captain general, Marvel. Isn't he? Or colonel?
No, he's a colonel. He's a colonel. And he's underneath Ronan. This is, you're hearing it here first, people, that this is what I think. I was talking to Roy with this yesterday, and he was like, it makes sense. And I think it's Yon Rogg because something happens to her I think when you see her in the trailer and she's upside down and she's in that machine thing. I think that's Yon Rogg that's removing her memory, because I think there's something, Young Rog has something to do with like Captain Marvel, and they're just kind of switching the roles. They're making her the Captain Marvel who I thought was working under Marvel,
right?
But they're kind of making her that character completely. So that issue number 12, which has increased in value. Yon Rogg that's his first appearance in there with Marvel. So I bet you that's going to just start. And once they find out who the hell Jude Law is, I bet you, boom, that one's going to start.
All right, well, I'm going to start trolling the back issue bins looking for that. Obviously, Moon Knight is one I'm still holding out for, which is Werewolf by Night issue 27.
Yeah, I just sold a copy of that a few weeks ago. That book is stupid, too.
That's always been a hot book, even before rumors of TV shows. I think it's because there was a low press run or whatever. It's not easy to come by.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, those monster mags and all
Well,
that
yeah,
stuff.
That's what I was telling you, too. It's almost Halloween. Monster books, is that the big thing? Because, I mean, look at that. The early 70s, you had, I don't know who threw the first punch, maybe it was DC with the House of Secrets, where they had a lot of characters like the Swamp Thing, and you know, people started getting
Wasn't
into
it. Witching Hour? I thought Witching Hour
was
came
the, a, Was it the Witching Hour issue 87?
That came out in 69. See, that's when the Comics Code was being lifted, and that's what prompted Roy to do Morbius, because Stan asked Roy to, I think they were going to put like Dracula in there, but Stan wanted Roy to do something more of
because the code said you couldn't have vampires, you couldn't have zombies and all that stuff, right?
Right, but then once that got lifted, that's when you got the Tomb of Dracula and all that stuff.
Frankenstein's Monster, the Tomb of Dracula, Werewolf by Night. Yeah, they all came out, yeah.
Those issues are friggin' crazy.
Werewolf by Night?
Yes, crazy. I just sold a bunch of copies. It's Marvel Spotlight number 2, but then all those Werewolf by Nights, everybody's going. It's funny. Marvel can do no wrong with the back issues. Everybody's wanting those issues, you know, and they're still kind of affordable. But listen, when we used to collect comics, those Werewolf by Nights were in the 25-cent bin. You could, you know, comic stores would be giving you for free. Moon Knight, all that stuff, nobody cared.
Yeah, those used to be, like, literally, people would say, just take those books. They were like a nickel.
I remember, ready for this? I remember when I was young, this comic book store I went to was called Park Nostalgia. It was in the Cape Cod. It was this little hole in the wall. They got an entire run of Iron Man, all the way from number one, all the way to, like, I think it was to, like, 200. And the guy offered me, I was so young at the time, the guy said, he goes, give me $100 and I'll give you the whole box. And I was like, oh my God, $100. I was like, in my mind, I was like, I'd never see $100. That was a lot for me. You know, I was a little kid. Yeah. But I can remember him saying that. Could you imagine him, like, that entire run? I mean, the 55 was in there when nobody cared. The number one was, I remember Iron Man was so dead in the water. Think of that, in the 80s. Who the hell was collecting? This was in the late 80s or mid 90s. Who the hell was collecting that stuff? Can you imagine?
I'm just thinking what you would have pulled out of there now. You would have got the first appearance of Thanos and Drax,
which would have been Iron Man number one, that first Iron Man.
Iron Man 1, that. I mean, what other big books were in there? Demon in the Bottle stories.
But all Iron Man stuff is big now, regardless. I mean, the 100 there is good. But I'm just saying, like, even all Iron Mans are, all the Marvels are moving. You know, it's just insane. I remember also, like, those getting the Tales to Astonishes and all that.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
those were giveaways.
Those key Marvel comics, like the X-Men number one, the AF-15, Spider-Man 1, Hulk 1.
Daredevil 1.
I mean, you can get those coverless, and they're still going for thousands of dollars. It's just so people want those comics, you know. They want them more. Nope. Who's really looking for those early? First off, those Golden Age Batman stuff and Superman stuff. Yeah, those are expensive because they're old. But, like, how many new people in this industry within the last 20 years are actually looking for that issue?
I saw a Batman book. I was almost going to buy it. It was at Cave Comics, $220. It was, I think, Detective Comics issue 350-something, and it had Batman and Robin on the cover looking at a projection screen, and it was a picture of an older version of Batman. And he says, look, Robin, it's my father dressed up as Batman, and it's a story about how Thomas Wayne goes to a masquerade party and he dresses up like a Batman creature or something. But they considered that the first Thomas Wayne Batman origin, and it's
the one that was in Flashpoint, or like,
yes, that's the, like, one that becomes the Batman in Flashpoint,
right.
So maybe that book suddenly surged up because of that book, because I can't imagine that being a $200 book.
But even you, I mean, I know we're pro Marvel, but let's be honest for something. There's something about the Marvel comics that has a strange energy to it. They look better. They look hipper. It just looks a lot more. There's something more going on.
It's timeless. You know, it's funny you say that, because they had a whole bunch of DC books that came in last week with those Marvel ones, and those were still there, and they were on the wall, and I was looking at some of the artwork on the covers, and it just screamed 1968, 1971, 72.
It looked
so dated. It's one of those things, like, I could tell you.
It looked like Jerry Woodway's shirt.
No, stop it. I felt like
jeans. It looks like his shirt. His wear. It screams Jerry Woodway.
I don't know what the hell. It's just the font, the smell of the book. It reminds me of being a little kid in 1970, 71, like on a bad rainy day. And, you know, miserable, depressing. It's just the oddest connotations that come to mind when I see those books. Yeah.
And if people are screaming if our millions and millions of fans are screaming at their iPod right now, think about this. If we're wrong, then how come DC started changing up their cup? Like, they started trying to be like Marvel. So, I mean, like, it shows you the progression, that how Marvel was so ahead of the curve. But you look at it, you're right. You look at it today. You can put an AF-15 or a number one, and you can put it against, like, a... It's just there's something about it.
Even the lame issues of Spider-Man, when it's like Riot on Campus, or no, Crisis on Campus, or he's fighting the kangaroo, or some really lame ass people. I'd rather read that. Yeah.
Right. Even as a kid, I like, so, and it's funny, like, if you look at the movies, it's the same thing. Like, for some reason, their heroes are
antiquated.
Because look, okay, in all, let's be honest. Captain Marvel can be a tough sell because it's a girl, you know, there's a lot of people that are sick of that stuff. But if DC was putting that Brie Larson movie out, I bet you it would have been in the trash. But there's something about that, it's Marvel, that you got.
Yeah, I mean, she's an obscure character. Let's not sugarcoat this. People think, oh, wow, Captain Marvel's going to be a big deal. She is not a big deal in the Marvel books that I grew up with, or he wasn't. He was just there, and he died when he had cancer.
You can go even further. Carol Danvers is as lame as she, like, as unknown and lame as that she was. She really wasn't that lame. You had to read the comics, but Ms. Marvel was, you know, she was a pretty decent character. She was kicking ass and taking names. But let's throw this out there. The Guardians of the Galaxy is proof positive that there is nothing good about them. There's nothing good about those characters. And if you ever said to me, I got $1 billion and I need $1 billion to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, I would have said, hell no.
But it's funny because our good friend, third mention today, Scott Martin, I mentioned last week I picked up that Submariner and Captain America fighting on the cover of Avengers 116, and you said that's part of the bigger Avengers Defender War, and I said, you know, I don't think I've ever read that. Scott Martin came in the mail yesterday, sent me his trade reprint of that Avengers Defender War, written by Steve Englehart.
Our buddy Steve Englehart.
Steve Englehart, editor at the time, of course, was Rascally Roy Thomas. Artwork in this thing's by Bob Brown, Sal Buscema.
Let me tell you.
Well, I just got to tell you one thing. Roy is going crazy in the first couple pages. There are so many back in the day. I don't even know if they do these anymore. But remember the editor's notes in the lower corner, like, hey, check out issue 83. We know she's not the same warrior as the Valkyrie, and on and on and on. But there's all these like little footnotes. This was probably the most complicated crossover. I believe it's the first ever comic book crossover between two titles, the Defenders and the Avengers. And you have Loki and I can never say it. Well, hold on, give me a second.
Dormammu
teaming up to go against the Avengers and the Defenders. But it's amazing, all the little footnotes where he's like, CFF issue 56. This happened way back in Avengers number 1. They are really going to town on this, you know?
Yeah, that's Roy taking a page out of Stan Lee. You know, that's the great thing about Stan Lee in the back in the day. Like, there was a cohesive universe. Like, you know, like, that's what they wanted. But they knew to get the new readers and all that stuff, obviously, like, and, you know, you had to get the two titles.
Yeah.
And that was cool. That was a big freaking deal back then. Because Englehart was writing both of them, correct?
Oh, Englehart's writing both of them. And he's almost doing a Chris Claremont. He's got, there's one panel I'm looking at right now. There's no artwork in it. It's just all text. It's like he's describing what has happened. I'm like, wow. When you got to do that in a comic, that's, to me, it always felt if there's a lot of words in, you know, the description, the narrative, it's too complicated. Or maybe.
That's true.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, this was 4 or 6 issues or so, this crossover. If they did this story now, it would be a year-long event story.
Oh, yeah. Now it's like, yeah, that's and you know what's funny? And they did that with, well, much publicity. You just had to kind of like, oh, my God.
Well, there's no comic book stores at this point. So the kids had to really go find this on the spinner racks at the pharmacy, you know?
Yeah, but when they saw that, they were probably like, oh, my God, this goes into the Avengers, or this goes into that new Defenders series. It's like, that was kind of...
I love how it ends. Elizabeth, this issue at the end, it says, you know, next issue. And at the time, they didn't have any internet, so this is the only way they could tell kids what's going on. It said, next, the Battle Royal continues in Avengers 117. Go read this one. Plus, for the first time in the Marvel Age, Captain America versus the Submariner. Don't forget, go to Defenders issue 10 and see the Thor versus the Hulk.
Yeah.
And then it says, both on sale next month. Get them quick because you're watching collector's items in the making. We have spoken. That's Roy talking, right?
Yeah, that's right. And the funny thing is, he was right. I mean, back then, he's just trying to make kids get the book. But those, you know, it is buy it. Everybody, that Defenders number 10 is the most expensive issue in the Thor versus Hulk there. And I'll tell you, John Romita did one of the greatest covers ever in the history of comics with that issue. And oh my God, that was great. Think of how exciting. See, this is almost like what we're getting now with the movies.
Yeah.
It's like back then it was like, oh my God, it was so exciting.
I know, it's funny. Now I'm reading the next one. It says Avengers 118 on sale next month. Supervillains meet superheroes. 14 of them in the wildest, most awe-inspiring climax ever recorded. We've been telling you all along this was going to be big, but you'll have to see it to believe it. Be here, baby. Marvel moves out. So
is that Roy?
Yeah, that's the little caption box at the bottom. So I got to say, how much is that worth, that particular issue?
Which
Avengers
one?
118, is that a big book? 118 has the Defenders and the Avengers on the cover. Avengers 118 is an expensive book.
Out of all those issues, the Defenders 10 is the most expensive.
All right, I would have figured the conclusion of the story would be the big one, but maybe not.
No, because people, what was the big deal about that is all the heroes fought each other. You know, like you had that great mix and match stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised, Mitch, if, you know, maybe down the line in the Marvel movies and stuff, you get something kind of like that going on.
Well, hopefully it's the real Defenders and not the TV show ones. I mean, those are the street level Marvel heroes as opposed to the Marvel movie characters, which are like the cosmic.
Well, Mitch, I got a little trivia question for you. What? Okay, that was the first, like, intentional Marvel big crossover of the 70s and stuff. But do you know what the first one was? Do you remember?
Wouldn't it be the Avengers versus the Fantastic Four? Back in issue 13, is it?
No. That was for one issue. That's when they crossed over. It even goes a little before that.
Oh, are you talking about that crazy DC Marvel crossover with the Redland Halloween Parade?
Think about this. It starts Avengers? At Avengers. It starts at Avengers number one.
Well, you're breaking up there. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. What happened? Avengers number one set off what?
Yeah, we don't know if this was intentional or not, but it starts off with the coming of the
Avengers. Oh, wait, wasn't that? Wait, didn't? What about that issue we did as a show, Thor 118 or whatever?
When yes. But that's part of the bigger story. It starts at Avengers 1,
yeah.
Then 2, then 3, then it goes to four. The Captain America comes.
Right.
Then it goes to Fantastic Four 25 and 26. You know, obviously the big battle.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to Avengers 5. But then that Journey into Mystery 112 was also cohesive in there because Thor fought the Hulk from
side battle that happened.
Yeah, behind in Avengers number 3. So that was actually the first. But the thing is we don't know if that was something Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, like, that was intentional. We're gonna flip it. We're gonna go. Like, did they have that plan that they were gonna jump around and all those issues?
Well, that is interesting. Has that all been collected in one big trade?
No, I do. The funny thing is I do. I did write a story, and it's gonna be for the Jack Kirby collector maybe next year. I write about that, about how we don't know if Stan Lee and Jack Kirby did that intentional or not, but it worked. But that was the first crossover and all that stuff of the DC, of the
Marvel. So that whole storyline, if you add it all together, it's like multiple chapters of one big epic.
Yeah, and I have it. I call it the Coming of the Avengers, and I talk about that whole thing. Because it's basically about the Hulk rampaging through all the issues. Like, you know, and his little team up with the Submariner, and, you know, they're against the humanity. But that's
Yeah,
you don't really, you see, that's the thing is, it's not advertised as being this big multi-crossover, but it is.
I don't even think they had the term yet for it.
Yeah, so I did write a nice big article on that, and so it should be in Jack Kirby Collector for next year.
All right, well, I'm headed down to Baltimore to see the crew. If anybody's listening to the Power Cosmic, I'll be walking around there for a couple days trying to get some new guests for next year's Terrific Con with the Mohegan Sun, August 9th to the 11th, 2019. Then after that, it's New York Comic Con. which is I have my press pass for all 4 days, but I'm only going to go 2 days. I think I'm going Thursday and Friday. It's too much. It's exhausting. There's too many people. It's too much shoving and pushing. And for what? It's just miserable. It's not a fun time. It really isn't.
You got a hotel there? You got a hotel?
No, New York, I don't bother with a hotel because I can just drive or take the train, and it's only like an hour. So I just save the money. But my wife even said, why don't you just stay over? I go, for what, to get some bed bugs? It's just disgusting. But it's so funny how New York Comic Con used to be the event, and now it's out of all the shows I go to all year, out of all the shows, that's the one I despise and can't stand going to. But I only go there because I do interviews with actors.
Do you despise it because of the crowds?
And with the second I get off that train into that place, all I'm doing is counting down the minutes when I can go home. That tells me it's not a good show. I don't know. I think it's a combination of the crowds, the attitude. People all want to make a lot of money because they've spent so much money on those booths. Like, you know, you feel bad for the guys that are doing those self-published comics because you know they've spent over $1,000 just for that space, and then they had to do the hotel and the car and all that stuff. It's just there's a sense of desperation. You know what I mean? Everybody just wants to make money, and it's, you know, you get that New York edge to it where everyone's like hustling and pushing and shoving and like, come on, buy it. What do you want to do? Buy it, you know? Don't stand there and talk to me. I don't make money if you're talking to me. Come on. So...
Yeah, well,
it's just not fun. It's not a fun. How about you went to a show this weekend, a little one day Comic Con? You probably had more fun there.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, that was pretty good. And then you can get the good prices for stuff too.
Oh yeah, too. I never buy a comic in New York because I know it's priced up like two or three times what it should be. Right.
And they're not going to budge for a gift because they have to pay. I mean, just think about that. Some of those guys got to sell like $2,500 worth of stuff just to break even.
Our friend Jimmy Gambino went to a show. I'm not going to say which one it was. It was like 2 weeks ago, and it was done by one of the bigger companies. I was talking all week. There was nobody there. They were expecting 30,000 people. They got barely 8,000, and the aisles were empty. Like you could drive trucks through them, like big trucks. And he said he was out about $1,800 between the rental van, the hotel stay, you know, the gas. Not to consider how much was your time worth to just sit there and not make any sales.
Yeah, that's kind of brutal because, like, sometimes, you know, back in the day when I used to do every show in the world, that, like, it's just like, and you just break even, or maybe you even lose a few bucks, and you're like, dude, all the wear and tear,
yeah,
the gas, and all that stuff. It's like, geez, I could have stayed home, and it wouldn't have even
you would have made more money if you sat home, but, you know, it is what it is. A lot of people have been begging me to do a horror convention, you know, like Monsters and Freddy Krueger and all that jazz. They keep asking about that.
Well, I kind of think a comic convention is a horror convention. You see some of the rubes that go there? Hey.
Oh, stop it.
But I don't know. Stick with CT Gamer and see where that gets you. You almost want to die after you when you anticipation for that, don't you? So what are you going to throw?
All right, that's the warning bell telling us that we've exceeded our time right now. Actually, CT GamerCon, I'm already into it. I didn't get into it. I've been playing the Spider-Man PlayStation 4 video game. Now that my kids are in college, we have their video game here. And
which
Spider-Man,
I've heard. Like, I don't play video
it's,
games.
No, it's an amazing game. Let me just tell you. I can't wait. I play it every night just before
what
bed.
What makes it so great, though? Then there's so many Spider-Man games up there.
I play the original Spider-Man game back on the Atari, which was a nightmare making. But the reason why this game is so good, I'm going to tell you, is the graphics are phenomenal. I actually spent time just being Spider-Man in between the little missions you have to go on, just spinning the web going around New York City. The first thing I did is, you're obviously Peter Parker and you have a camera. You could go around New York City and take pictures of famous landmarks and you get like points for all that. So I actually spent the first couple days playing this game going to everywhere I could think of in New York, like the museums, the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building, the World Trade Center, all that stuff, just taking the little pictures, and you get points for that. And then I'm like, oh, what other obscure places are there? And then they've got Marvel places. I went to Josie's Bar last night. I found the Avengers Mansion. I found the Wakanda Embassy. So there's a lot of, like, if you know your Marvel stuff, there's a lot of in-joke type of Easter eggs there. And then The storyline is so far, it's something to do with Doc Ock. He's not Dr. Octopus yet. He's at the Empire State University. He's working on his project with his, you know, tentacle arms.
Do they have Tom Holland's voice?
You know what's weird? It sounds like Tom Holland when he's Spider-Man, but the Peter Parker graphic or whatever, the actor they use, looks more like Andrew Garfield. So it almost makes me think, like, how long have they been designing this game? And maybe they had this in the works years ago and they didn't want to go back and redo all the artwork because he's really tall and skinny, looks like Andrew Garfield, but he sounds like Tom Holland. It's really bizarre. It's not the real actors, though. But J. Jonah Jameson is not a newspaper reporter. He's a like a radio podcaster guy in this one. And you hear his rants as Spider-Man's going through the city. You'll hear him talk about stuff. Aunt May's in it, but she doesn't look like Aunt May. She looks more like the Sally Field version of it, where she's not Marissa Tomei. But, you know, there's amazing sequences in it. The Shocker's been in it. I've fought him. The Kingpin's in it. He was really cool. Have not seen the Green Goblin, though. Norman Osborn's in it, and they even did his hair kind of weird. You know that weird Norman Osborn
curly
hair?
Yeah, that curly hair?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell it's supposed to be, but that's in there too. But so far, it's pretty good. Miles Morales, I just became Miles Morales last night because Peter Parker was knocked unconscious, and for some reason, Miles is in it, and he I don't know if he has superpowers or what's the deal yet, but he's going to be Spider-Man. And you've got a bunch of different uniforms that you can unlock. I've won the Ben Reilly Spider-Man, you know, the hoodie version of it.
You get the one when he has the bag over his head with the
fan. No, I wish that was in there. That is not in there. There are some other ones that are there. Funny, the Spider-Man suit from the new movie, from the Civil War.
So is it easy to learn? Is it easy for
Yeah, it is. That, I mean, that's the thing, too, because I'm not good at those buttons and all that jazz. But I got to admit, I had to contact Chris Gugliotti at one point because there was an oil tanker going over on its side, and you had to spin the web to stop it from exploding. I couldn't figure out how to do it. Gugliotti's like, move the cursor to the X button and hit this button. I was like, he knew it in seconds. He finished the whole game. It's one of these games that's like a...
What else is he going
to
do?
It's like a 30 to 50-hour game, and he's already finished it in a week. It only came out like 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, what the hell did you do? He goes, I didn't leave the house for a couple days. I go, oh, my God.
He didn't leave the house at all.
I sit there, and I play like, oh, there's nothing on TV. My wife's going to bed. There's nothing. Right. I'll play for an hour or two, and then I'll fall asleep.
Let me throw this at you. Yeah. I was a little, like, this is almost like you laying on the floor.
No, I'm not on the floor on this one. I'm sitting in a chair.
Hold on. When I didn't hear from you for a little while, and I said, what are you doing? And you said, oh, I'm playing the Spider-Man game. And I said, here's this 50-year-old guy.
52.
He's got kids, and he's like, no, but, and I just thought of you playing that video game.
I didn't know I'd be playing
that. I was so disgusted. I was like, you're a grown man. Grow up. I was so disgusted.
No, listen. We have tons of video games in this house. Tons of them. I don't play. I'm looking right now at a stack of video games in the living room. I don't even know what the hell they are. I think the only one I ever played was the Marvel Lego one because that was really cute and it had a lot of the Marvel comic character references and stuff. But no, I don't understand the video games now. My days ended with Space Invaders.
I don't know. It was just something about you getting like, you know, you got the beard growing and you're like, you know, you haven't showered for years and you're
All right. Yeah, maybe that's happening.
This is what I envisioned in my head and I'm like, I was just, like I said, I felt the same way as when you lay on the floor and read your card. I'm like, you're a grown man. No, you're an old man. I was just like, what? Just go me crazy.
All right. Well, or I could have been laying on the ground reading my Avengers Defenders graphic novel, which you don't understand how excited I get when I get these books. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so cool. I can't wait to go read this book. As opposed to going on Wednesdays to get the new stuff, which I kind of roll my eyes and, okay, here, take my money. But it is what it is. Speaking of which, they did make an action figure of the bag-headed Spider-Man. I just realized it when you said that. I never managed to get that figure, but I'm going to go on eBay and see if it's even worth anything now. They came out with one of those.
What is that, like a select or one of
whatever the 6-inch line was called. I thought those were those Marvel Selects?
The Legends? Were they Legends?
They were the little 3 3/4 or 4-inch figures they had for a couple years, and they stopped doing them. And they made a chase figure of Spider-Man in the Fantastic Four outfit with the bag over his head, like he wore in issue.
Like he was the Unknown Comic, remember?
Yes, yeah, that's what he looked like, the Unknown Comic. Yeah. But I never got that. That was one of those things. I'm going to look right now. No one's ever brought that to the random flea market, have they?
No, I never. I usually pass on those things. I mean, like I bought a few collections of that, but I've never seen that one. You know me, I like the older stuff. I don't really go for the contemporary stuff unless I have to.
What issue was that in, anyway?
That was, I don't remember, but that it was during the 80s, though. I think that was, like, that happened during the 80s. And then they had the kick me thing in the back.
Yeah.
John Storm did that for him, right? Because he needed it, and then, because he was with the Fantastic, so he threw the kick me thing in the, and he put it in the back.
Yeah, I don't know. Did he join the Fantastic Four? I can't even remember.
No, I think it was just for, you know, how him and Johnny Storm. That little, they always had that little connection. Because
I'm looking for it now on eBay. It's not here. Bagheaded Spider-Man.
Sure can't be that.
I did pick up the Spider-Mobile. They came out with that, the Hot Wheels line. I found it in all places at a Walgreens. I walked in and they came out with the Punisher van, a taco truck for Deadpool, the Ghost Rider's car from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I guess he has a car now. And then they had the Spider-Mobile. I was so excited to see that. I'm like, oh, my
mail
God.
Mail one to Jerry Conway. I guarantee in like 2 weeks you get it mailed back. It's not even opened. You know? Jerry Conway hates that thing.
Spider-Man, Bag-Headed Spider-Man. I can't find it anywhere. I don't know.
I'm sure.
Baghead Spider-Man. I'm going to look for that. Oh, there it is right there. Oh, okay, $39.
Yeah.
He's wearing a Fantastic. Now, that's out of the costume. Somebody wants 64. They're all pretty expensive here. They're all in the 50s. Some jackass wants $300 for it. Good luck with that one, pal.
Three, yeah.
Yeah, jeez. It's not going to happen. $89. Oh, whoa, they made a Heroclix. Heroclix, Marvel Fantastic Four, Bagheaded Spider-Man Heroclix, loose, $28.
Wow, that must have been of a chase or something from back then. Those old figures, like, they don't hold up, but that's
you didn't have this, Mr. Heroclix? It was called the Bombastic Bagman. That was the name of the figure.
Oh, the Bombastic Bagman.
Heroclix, as pictured. I don't know if it has the card with it. Might have been before they had the card. Speaking of Heroclix, you're about to go buy some new ones in a couple weeks, aren't you?
Yeah, and I actually have got a connection. We got a Thanos copter coming to me, and I got it very, very cheap.
You got a Thanos copter?
It's coming. Yeah, it's in the mail. It's coming. Overseas. I didn't get it. Somebody got it for me, my drug dealer.
Oh, yeah, great. He gets you Flintstone chewable vitamins, right?
Yeah, and he got, because they're going for like almost $200 now. But, Mitch, just so you know, and after Thanksgiving, they'll be available in America. So, like, I'm sure they're going to be $100 a pop, or in that range.
Oh, yeah. Anyway,
I want to sign.
All right. We're over an hour today. We didn't need to be over an hour. So, that's it. Let's just wrap this up because now we're really rambling, right?
And that's that.
And that's that. This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.